Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Michael Ting, Senior Vice President, Digital Markets at Hyperwallet. Michael, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Karen. It's great to be here.
So it's been a great conversation that we've had over the last couple of episodes as we lay out the top trends of a great marketplace, and we're talking in particular here about on-demand marketplaces, which are in and of themselves very unique animals. The last time we were together, we talked about the importance of really owning the experience that both buyers and sellers really have as part of their involvement with these marketplaces. And this time, I think it would be great to dive into some of the barriers to growth. And one of the things that I know, Michael, you guys have talked a lot about at Hyperwallet is, in order to really be a great on-demand marketplace, you have to remove them. Well, what are they?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, the biggest barriers, I think, to growth for a lot of these on-demand companies is this belief that they can just replay the same playbook over and over again. You know, typically when they're getting started, you know, most of them are launching some sort of an MVP version of their product to get to a critical mass of users very quickly with the least amount of friction. And they typically try to do that in a market that's familiar to them. But trying to replay that over and over again becomes really, really complicated.
I do take the point that you can't really just rely on, you know, what worked in a small beta. But specifically, when you think about these guys and where they are in their evolution, you know, let's take it into chunks. Let's say they've got their minimum viable product, it's in the market, and they're looking at the short-term window. So no sense planning long-term if you can't get past the short-term hurdles.
Right.
What should they be thinking about from that perspective?
Well, I think what they need to be thinking about, number one, is, you know, are both the buyers and the sellers on both sides of the marketplace understanding what the value proposition is? Do they understand how it's different from the status quo? If you look at some of the biggest marketplaces out there, the largest on-demand company, they're providing services in industries that have been around for a very long time. They've just been very fragmented. And so do the consumers and the people on the supply side really understand, you know, the value of the platform and are they resonating toward that? I think, you know, when you speak specifically about the short term, you know, they do need to consider, you know, things like the usability of the product and are they providing the right support channels so that people are getting their questions answered, because, you know, the whole value of these marketplace platforms is, you know, to provide something that people couldn't otherwise get in the existing environment.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do think that sometimes just because technology makes something possible doesn't necessarily make it valuable. And the biggest barrier to growth in the short term is whether you're solving enough of a problem for enough people to actually get the flywheel moving.
That's right.
So let's say you've checked that box, and now things are humming. You still need to continue to keep the flywheel moving to scale. What about now long term expansion, and in particular thinking about expanding outside of a domestic market into a global environment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the geographic expansion, I think, sets off a whole wave of other expansion. So meaning now you have to think about demographic expansion too, right? Because you go into some markets and you're now going to be attracting a profile that's different than your home market. So, you know, in our world, you know, what we typically see are companies that launch in a market where people are heavily banked. Everybody has a bank account, and then they move into a market where, you know, that isn't the case, and now they have to figure out how do we actually serve people that don't have the same access to those types of services. And then once you have you know, that sort of demographic footprint, now you've got to think about the actual services that you're providing. Is the core service that you're providing, is that sufficient, or do you actually have to now layer on other types of services to make it relevant to that particular market? So they're not just considering how to cast a wider net. They also have to think about how to retain and drive more velocity, you know, from an existing user base. You know, they have to think about how commerce works in non-traditional markets. You know, consumers pay for the service. You know, how do the workers and suppliers get paid in those markets? And what is the typical behavior of those people? You know, not everyone, as I said, has a credit card or a bank account in all these markets. And in order for these marketplaces to provide a local solution, they have to consider how much they want to do on their own and if they have to leverage partners or not.
Got it. It sounds like there are just a lot of things to take into consideration when you're thinking about removing barriers to growth. And one of them that you just pointed out is making sure that you can figure out how to pay the side of the platform that's providing the service. It's often easier to actually extract payment from the buyer than it is to get money to the supplier. But what's the most challenging, if you could narrow it down to the one thing, what's the most challenging aspect to the expansion that we just talked about?
I think the biggest challenge is localizing that service, right? And I think conventionally, particularly in the online world, right, we've typically associated localization with, you know, having a multilingual site and having some local content on the web page. But when it comes to these services where there's actually a commerce transaction occurring here, in order to actually localize that solution, in order to, specifically, as you mentioned, pay those suppliers in a local market, those marketplaces typically have to open a local bank account, which means that they have to have a local entity, which probably means that they need to be properly licensed in that country. And so, you know, that compliance and regulatory aspect of being local and providing a local service, you know, is non-trivial, and it's simply not scalable for a lot of these companies to build a local stack for every country that they serve in. And we see it all the time in our experience, and it's one of the most difficult business problems we help our clients solve.
Well, and when you layer on top of that the expectation that the money arrives instantly, there's been a lot of press recently about many on-demand marketplaces being really challenged to do that and obviously delivering that in order to keep suppliers in the boat. That kind of leads to the next question, which is competition and that being a barrier to growth. And if you think about what we're talking about, which is payment, the ability to really localize payment, as you just point out, is a real advantage that keeps suppliers engaged and on those platforms, and perhaps is a way to stave off the competition. But I'm sure that you have a point of view on that. So how do you advise these on-demand marketplaces to do that, to kind of stay in front of the competitive pack?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, we think of payments, you know, as an integral part of the product offering, right? I mean, these suppliers and these people that come onto these platforms, they're coming on there for a single reason, and that is to make money. And for them, it as opposed to what we traditionally regarded as the user experience in the online world, for them, the pinnacle of the user experience is getting paid. And they're typically looking at that marketplace platform to ensure that they do get paid efficiently, reliably, cost-effectively. And so in order to do that, those marketplace platforms have to be in control of that event. They cannot, you know, relinquish control of that to a third party or, you know, allow it to be, you know, just a situation where the supplier, the seller, you know, have to receive payments on their own from whoever the consumer is, because after all, it was the marketplace that put the two together, and so they really look at the marketplace to be the one to get them paid.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we tend to focus on the ability for the buyers to acquire the service and not a lot is really focused on getting the money to the supplier, which of course is very critical. Well, Michael, it's always great to get your perspective on what makes these marketplaces really great and what separates the good ones from the great ones. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Karen. Appreciate it.